You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science and Sport. Today we are in Cividale del Friuli.
Cozze ci delle cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney and I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel. Dove siamo?
We are in Cividale del Friuli.
Correct.
Did I get that right?
Pretty much. Cividale.
Cividale. Okay. Cividale del Friuli.
I think your Italian pronunciation has improved over the last week.
I should hope so. I've been here 10 days now. You'd hope a little bit would sink in, wouldn't you? And the daily sort of D minuses have become a sort of C minus, maybe.
By the time you leave on Monday, you'll be correctly identifying Dolomites.
I wouldn't go that far. Are these Dolomites we can see?
No.
Right, stage 13 of the Giro d'Italia from Palmanova to Cividale del Friuli. 170 kilometres featuring two first category climbs, the Monte Maggiore and the Cima Porsus. The race set off without the first and second on yesterday's stage. Andre Greipel and Caleb Ewan both went home last night. Contrary to what I said in last night's podcast, Giacomo Nizzolo of Trek did wear the red jersey as points competition leader, inheriting it from Greipel, who was a non-starter.
Upset. You were so upset about that.
Controversial, isn't it? I mean, it breaks with all conventions of bike racing.
I think we spent more time discussing that in the car than we've spent discussing any other thing that's happened in the Giro d'Italia.
Well, I think that gives you an indication of how strongly I feel about it. So, the headlines of today's stage there. Mikel Nieve of Team Sky won the stage, salvaging something for them after Mikel Landa went home earlier in the week and all chance of overall victory disappeared for Team Sky. Andre Amador, the Costa Rican for Movistar, started the day 24 seconds behind Bob Jungels and ended it 26 seconds up. He's the first Costa Rican to wear the pink jersey. Having said that, Jungels did put up a very spirited defence of that jersey. Of the major favourites, Vincenzo Nibali was the most aggressive, attacking a number of times and leading in the group to take a small time bonus on the line. That gave him 4 seconds on everyone, something that may have escaped attention a little bit. As for the stage, well, it was a very attacking start to the day with groups going clear and coming back, and it wasn't really until a group of 32 riders got away that a pattern was set. Around the mid part of the stage, Stefan Denifil of I Am Cycling was clear on his own. On the Cima Porsus, Cannondale were very active, Moreno Moser attacked, and then Joe Dombrowski was away with the eventual stage winner, Nieve. And it was Nieve who went clear alone. And over the course of the climb, he was chased by various combinations of Matteo Monteguti, Dombrowski and Giovanni Visconti of Movistar. On the final climb, it was Nieve versus Visconti, and that was a race that Nieve never really looked like losing. So the jerseys then, Andre Amador in pink, Giacomo Nizzolo in red, Damiano Cunego still in blue, and Bob Jungels will be back in white tomorrow.
And Lionel, there was some good old-fashioned Italian beef, some good old-fashioned Giro beef, some bistecca fiorentina. There was a bit of a fallout between Visconti and Cunego because over one of the GPMs, the mountain prizes early in the day, there was a bit of a shoulder barge there, wasn't there? Not a deliberate shoulder barge. I think Visconti went down. Well, he didn't go down, but he made quite a lot of it. And Cunego said after the finish that he tried to apologise. Visconti didn't really accept his apology. And then Visconti found himself the centre of another storm in a teacup because there were questions at the finish about why he didn't wait for Valverde or White or Amador, because he was away, why he didn't sort of put the brakes on a little bit and give them a hand. And of course he came out with that old chestnut, his radio wasn't working.
Well, was his radio working or not? Well, I don't think we know. But we do know that Andre Amador wasn't pointing any fingers at Visconti. He was saying that they were trying to win the stage as well as take the pink jersey, as well as keep Valverde's hopes of overall victory well on track. Excellent day for Movistar. Probably got overlooked a little bit, but they got three riders in that big 32-man break. Rojas, Sutelin,
who I found the other day. Do you know that Sutelin is a kind of German calligraphy? You might actually have noticed that Sutelin is probably one of the fonts on your PC.
Wow, extraordinary.
Incredible, isn't it?
Yeah. The other one in that group was the star of yesterday's podcast, Carlos Betancur, getting out in front, shedding a little bit more of that weight. Anyway.
It was an interesting move, that, wasn't it? Because, you know, obviously, Movistar have made no bones about the fact, and it's very obvious that they're going for GC and they're going for the pink jersey. And they almost played today as though they were going for the stage victory, to put so many riders in that front group. I mean, it does make sense because Rojas, for example, is a sprinter, and he would have been no help whatsoever to Valverde and Amador by the time they got to the last climb under normal circumstances. As things panned out, putting him out early, I mean, it's an old tactic. It's a tactic we see very often, but you know, there was the potential there. Even if it's only 100 metres, 200 metres, he could have linked up with his team captains at some point and given them a vital hand or a wheel or some food.
More significant than that, really, is help on the downhill or on the flatter sections. I know there's not a huge amount of valley road today, but having men up the road is never going to harm Valverde and Amador's chances. Sky played a similarly strong hand, really. They were very aggressive in trying to get in the right moves, and Mikel Nieve was one of the riders who had to kind of go across to the bigger group when it was looking like that was going to be the move of the day. And I mean, it salvaged something from this Giro for Team Sky, who had all of their eggs in Mikel Landa's rather fragile looking basket.
Well, we have spoken in the past numerous times, and we spoke the other day about Plan Bs. Now, the irony is that Team Sky, the team that's been criticised for a lack of Plan B on numerous occasions, has the ultimate Plan B in Mikel Nieve, because he's a specialist at being the Plan B. Because he's, I think, one of the questions in the press conference this evening was from a Spanish journalist who pointed out to Nieve that I think he's won four Grand Tour stages now, and they have all been when his team captain has had to pull out of the race or has had problems.
Yeah, and Sky, I mean, they are loaded with climbers, so they have a lot of options in these coming days. And it was interesting talking to Dario Cioni, and we'll hear from Sky's sports director in just a second. It was interesting hearing that they had targeted this day, because Cioni had come to look at it with Mikel Landa and with David Lopez, and they felt that this was a better racing day than tomorrow, which goes over five climbs that are all over 2,000 metres. And he made the point that it will be a little bit more defensive. Selection will come from the back. It won't be the opportunity to get out in front and be aggressive. Today was a much better chance to get up the road and make the race. So this is Dario Cioni talking just after the stage.
The plan was to go in the break. I knew the course because I had been here to sit with Mikel Landa and David Lopez. And for me, this is the hardest stage of the Giro. Is even hard, maybe with the Santana de Vindagno, but this might be harder than even tomorrow, even if it is short and has less climbing. But for the type of race that could come out, and the meeting we had said, okay, we want to be in the break. We were a mountain support team, so we got a lot of people that can climb well. And anyway, in the break could be even easier than staying in the peloton. So let's try from the gun. I mean, Nico, Sebastian and Mikel were the best options for the break. And Sebastian was the first group with Christian. And then I think Nieve bridged over on the harder climb. That proved to be the winning move, I think.
You say today's harder. Tomorrow goes over 2,000 metres five times. So what was it about today's stage that makes it harder? Is it the descending particularly, and the chance to make it aggressive?
Yeah, today was a bigger chance that people wouldn't be afraid from the distance. The roads today, we couldn't reach the break for 100k. That meant the cars couldn't overtake, the riders were on their own. All the descents were really technical. And the start of that would have happened today, for sure would have been an aggressive stage.
And finally, how much does a bit of local knowledge help, and the fact that Mikel had seen parts of the course?
He had the legs. That's the biggest part of the success. But maybe on the descent, I could a bit guide him with the corners and stuff. And maybe that made him even more comfortable once he got, because he didn't lose any time to Visconti, or very little. And normally Visconti is pretty good downhiller. And then once he was on the flat, we knew we just had to pace it. And
finally, did you know he had it once he went over the top?
Yeah, you know, you're not 100% sure. We knew that once he was over the top with the same, like 50 seconds, 56, over Visconti, we were pretty comfortable. Visconti's one never to rule out. But yeah, we were pretty comfortable, and going down, we told him, okay, we'll help you go down, but don't take any crazy risk, because a crash would have meant he could have lost the victory. And I think the best thing was that he arrived at the finish line and he could really enjoy it.
Well, you'd think that Sky would be quite a happy camp tonight, wouldn't you, Daniel?
You've really landed me in it here, haven't you, Lionel? Yeah, Dane Brailsford hasn't been in talkative mood, has he, this week?
He hasn't, no. He's been. He's not really been as visible as he often is on Grand Tours. We're not quite sure why that is at the moment. We may hope to find out in the coming days.
He's been visible behind the net curtain on the Team Sky bus, hasn't he?
He has,
just
yeah.
about.
Yeah, twitching curtains. Yeah, he declined to say anything to any of the reporters outside the Team Sky bus this evening. Not quite sure what that's all about, but we will seek to find
Chiro
out.
Came back to the press room tonight. And he says, what is wrong with Brailsford? I will send him an email.
Well, I think his best bet is to put a message in Dropbox, and Dave's certainly likely to pick that up. But yeah, I mean, Sky, they've got off the mark. It was important that they did that. I said a few days ago that they're sometimes not the best at reacting strongly after adversity. Although having said that, you know, the 2011 tour when Bradley Wiggins crashed, Edvald Boasen and Hagen saved their tour with a couple of stage wins. They have been in this boat before, but they'll be pleased to have got off the mark at the first opportunity for them, really. But the other big story of the day is the first Costa Rican in pink, Andre Amador, ridden a blinder of a Giro, hasn't he, Daniel?
He has, and he's ridden a blinder of a season, because we've talked on numerous occasions in this Giro already about what a fantastic classics campaign he rode and what a versatile rider he is. I mean, even throughout this year, I don't think anyone's been suggesting that he's a potential winner. We might start to revise that, but I think Amador even talked himself out of it in the press conference. He talks about how he struggles with the fast accelerations in the mountains, and you know, take into account that today's climbs were pretty short, certainly compared to what we're about to face in the Dolomites and in the Alps. And he was already struggling over a couple of those climbs, and he used his descending skills to get back on. But it's a card they will be able to play again. You know, you look at the number of climbs and some of the very, very long descents in the Alps, particularly the descents like the Agnello and the Bonnet. And I'm sure we talked about what a shrewd tactician Movistar's Eusebio Unzué is, and I'm sure they'll be able to use that card again later on in the race.
As much as we'd love to have a sort of Froome Wiggins-esque clash between two equally strong riders, it's just not shaping up to be like that, is it?
No, it's not, and they're dovetailing very harmoniously, aren't they? And I don't think Amador really has enough ambition for it to become a problem. I think he's very, very happy to be where he is, and he's going to save at the moment, but hey, he's been quite unequivocal about being here solely for Valverde.
And he's ridden the perfect team role, hasn't he? His attacks have all been designed to put Movistar as a whole into a stronger position rather than just put himself into a stronger position. Been quite smart riding, attacking at times that forced the others to chase. And today he had to dig quite deep to get himself back into that group. And he was second last over the line in that group to make sure he got the jersey.
He's in that softening up role, isn't he? That sort of tenderising role. He's kind of hanging up the strips of beef for Valverde to take a big bite.
So who's going to be Carpaccio by the end of the weekend?
We've had a lot of steak references today, haven't we? We're going to have another cracking culinary reference later. But talking of steak, we made this link the other day, didn't we, about the shark and the meat. I don't think it's time for the... Might not be that time yet, but we should mention Vincenzo Nibali's first meaningful attacks today, weren't they? And you know, Lionel, you've been droning on the whole Giro about Nibali's attacks kind of burning out pretty quickly, and I do agree with you to a certain extent, but I did mention a couple of days ago that Nibali has changed the length of his pedal cranks this year, and I understand that one reason he's done that is to try to give him more of a powerful acceleration and more of a sustained acceleration rather than these kind of fiddly twiddly little tippy tappy 50 yard attacks which do tend to fizzle out. But then I pointed out to you, and I argued that the selection generally in major tours now happens from the back rather than from the front. And okay, the groups tend to come back together after a Nibali attack, but they come together with one fewer rider or two fewer riders than was previously the case.
Yeah, I mean, Jakob Fuglsang, the Astana number two sort of lieutenant, it did a terrific job today. He was driving very, very hard. And I do sometimes, I always ask myself the question, is it actually effective or is it counterproductive setting such a hard pace and forcing your team leader when they attack to already go off what is a strong pace? But of course, if it was slower, then there'd be more chance of other riders responding. Like you say, you know, it would regroup. If it did regroup, it would regroup with everyone still feeling relatively fresh. But I can't help the Nibali firework comparisons. I think today he rode like a Catherine wheel. The other day he rode like a sort of Roman candle. We're waiting for the rocket. We'll see whether the rocket comes.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you to Eurosport for their sponsorship of the cycling podcast all season and at this Giro d'Italia. Without them, we wouldn't be here. I'm assuming everyone in the UK and Europe is watching the coverage of the race on Eurosport. I tuned into a bit of Rob Hatch and Sean Kelly's commentary this afternoon. I'm feeling a bit homesick, actually. I wanted to hear some familiar voices.
How is my old flatmate?
Ah, he sounded in good form, I have to say. So one man who should be watching the Giro at home on television is Richard Moore, our team captain. He's having a week at home before he comes back out on the next rest day. But I gather he wasn't in front of a television this afternoon. Let's hear Richard's nomination for the Pedaleur de Charme.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring our daily Pedaleur de Charme award. I didn't see any of the Giro stage today. I've been out riding my bike in Kent, and at East Grinstead station I've bumped into none other than Ryan Mullen of the Cannondale Pro Cycling Team. Hello, Ryan.
Hi, how's it going?
And you haven't seen any of the Giro stage today either, because you've been out riding your bike as well.
Yeah, I was all getting dropped.
Well, I'm sorry about that, Ryan, but you know, the trainer road form is still serving me well. Now, we've had a few nominations today for Pedaleur de Charme. Stiff competition, it seems. Visconti, a lot for him. Nieve, who won the stage. A few other names in that, Kunigo as well. But, Ryan, I think it's appropriate that you name today's Pedaleur de Charme.
Well, after his heroics today, I'm going to nominate Joe Dombrowski for the Pedaleur de Charme. And I would really like to know when this train's going to come.
So Richard's been out riding his bike, enjoying himself, and he got one of a friend of Dombrowski's to nominate Joe Dombrowski for the Pedaleur de Charme award today. It was a good performance by the young American, wasn't it? A former winner of the amateur Giro d'Italia.
It was. I would just go back slightly and take exception to your calling Richard the team captain. I think now he's been relegated to honorary de facto
club captain.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was an excellent performance by Dombrowski, and he's developing nicely, isn't he? He's starting to really progress at a quite sort of consistent rate. And I think we've spoken before on the podcast about reservations about his racecraft and reservations that he himself has about his ability in the European peloton, where things are a lot more chaotic than they are in the American peloton. And it's taken him a while to find his way, but he's doing that now.
Well, Joe Dombrowski is recording an audio diary for us during this Giro d'Italia, and that will be released shortly after the race, early part of June, for Friends of the Podcast. Our Friends of the Podcast program is 11 episodes that are available exclusively for the price of £10, and you can sign up for that at thecyclingpodcast.com. Now, Dombrowski was today's Pedaleur de Charme, but Daniel, you had to go and give the award, the coveted jersey, to yesterday's Pedaleur de Charme.
I had a hot date this morning with yesterday's Pedaleur de Charme. Let's see who it was and what he said. Filippo Pozzazzo, how proud are you to win the Pedaleur de Charme jersey?
Yeah, I'm very proud of me and Ciro, because I win this fantastic t-shirt only for the Ciro, and I have one message for Ciro. Ciro, I love you.
He says you're spending too much time on TV, not enough time in breakaways.
I hope today is a hard day, but the Spanish and the Colombian guys want to try stay in the front, but I hope for Busato is a good stage today.
Wow.
What more can be said about that? Ciro, you've joined us, you've ghosted in. Filippo Pozzato has revealed his true feelings about his soul sister.
Well, I'm not really happy, dear listeners, dear Lionel, dear Daniel, because maybe this, I would have preferred that this could be remain a secret till the end of the Giro. But if Filippo is the truth, imagine the truth. The voice, the image of the truth, so I can't deny him. So, yes.
It's just a shame that the listeners can't see the expression on your face and the hand gestures, Ciro. It paints a whole other picture. Oh, what's that noise?
Non intesi quali parole si scambiarono fra di loro.
né cosa riuscì a balbettare quando Rachele mi venne presentata. Il suo profumo però lo sentì bene, quasi tremai nell'ascoltare la sua risata argentina quando il buon Valerio raccontò una storia scherzosa. I didn't hear the words they exchanged or what I stammered when Rachele was introduced to me. I did though smell her scent and almost trembled as I listened to her silvery laugh when Valerio told a funny story. Wow, now Lionel, I'm now getting confused because we've got not a love triangle, we've got a love square. We've got at one point Filippo Pozzato, we've got another point Ciro Scognamiglio, we've got Vincenzo Nibali and Vincenzo Nibali's now wife, Rachele. I don't know, I'm completely disoriented now.
In a way, this is the whole history of Italian cycling represented by four people, isn't it?
Well, I think, Lionel, maybe don't agree completely with you, because, well, you named the four people in order to resume the history of Italian cycling. Me, it's not sufficient? Well, sorry, but I think that it's sufficient. Me, it's already okay to define the history of Italian cycling. The past, the present, and the future.
Okay, enough rubbish now, Ciro. Wow. Talk to us about Nibali and his day and Astana's day.
Well, I think that they would have expected to do a little bit more from the day, from this stage. I also spoke with Beppe Martinelli a little bit after the stage. And yes, he admitted that maybe they would have preferred to gain a little bit more. And they didn't gain. Certainly there was the strange thing that Nibali got the bonification 4 seconds, so ahead Valverde, something more unique than rare, because in a sprint normally. But Valverde gave the explanation that he didn't know that there were these 4 seconds, because maybe he thought that there were more than two riders before them. And they say that radio didn't work really well, but certainly it's important now that, well, for Astana will be a really crucial day tomorrow, because if they don't be able to have an advantage on Valverde or Movistar, it could be really complicated to Giro for Nibali, I think.
And Ciro, we had some good old-fashioned Italian polemica today with Visconti and Cunego. What's the latest?
Yes, the latest was that Cunego said to me, well, I spoke to both after the stage, so in this case, maybe once in a life I'm really well prepared on what I'm saying. But, well, Cunego say it was really, I mean, he said it has been my fault, so I'm really sorry for Giovanni. But it was, I mean, their contact on the GPM. Cunego said that it was a kind of masseur immediately in the streets, so on the GPM, and so for that he was obliged to change his. But Visconti, I mean, he said, well, Damiano is my friend, so I understand his apologies, but I'm still angry.
Interesting.
Wow. Ciro, you're free to go.
Thank you very much, Ciro.
Thank you. See, I'm free. I feel always free when I'm here.
Interesting there then, not only did Visconti's radio not work, but Valverde's radio didn't work. He wasn't able to hear that there were bonus seconds up for grabs on the line. Let's talk about Bob Jungels. We've talked about him a lot this week, but he's lost the pink jersey, but I thought he put up a really, really good fight. He couldn't have done any more, really, and he's still up there, second overall, 26 seconds back. We'll probably lose a lot more time tomorrow. By the looks of him, he went pretty deep today. But he's the hot favourite for the white jersey, as things are at the moment.
Well, he is the hot favourite for the white jersey, but Davide Formolo of Cannondale is moving up on the rails, and I was really impressed with him today. He was in the front group for much of the two decisive climbs, and Formolo is now 17th on general classification. He is
6:15
down on Amador, the leader, so not even too far from Amador. And he's very much within striking distance now of Jungels, isn't he? And I think that'll be quite a ding-dong battle between now and Turin.
Well, if Jungels put up a really visible and strong fight for the pink jersey today, one man who has been riding in the shadows, riding in the wheels very, very well, is the Colombian Esteban Chavez of Orica Greenedge.
Chirpy little chappy, isn't he, Lionel?
He is very. They're a very smiley, friendly team, though, all round.
They
really
are, and certainly Esteban Chaves is winner of the 2011 Tour de l'Avenir, had his big breakthrough last year in the Vuelta a España, won a stage there, was very prominent in the general classification right up until the finale in Madrid, and he's looked more and more mature in this race, and he's, what's really impressed me about him is that, you know, all the stereotypes about Colombian riders that they're tactically naive and they're poor descenders, he really debunks all of those because he's very good in both of those departments. I had a chat with Esteban Chaves at the finish today, and he talked not only about today's stage but also about tomorrow's Dolomite blockbuster to Corvara, which goes notably over the Paso Jao, which Chaves mentions.
Today is one of 3 days block. I don't know what is the hardest, but today is really important day. Today no have a breath, you know, all day is really full gas, and the important is we arrive with the favorite. Astana and Movistar show really, really good performance now, so for sure this is the big teams for follow. I've tried one, so see how is the people, but everyone is with me, so I'm stuck. But I think everyone do the same. Nibali also and Valverde, everyone shows, but everyone wait. Tomorrow is a harder stage, so we will see. Astana and Movistar is for me is the strongest one, but Mach and Cruz with, I look with really good pedaling, so it's long time for Torino, so you never know. I think for sure the race broken in the Paso Gao, mm-hmm. the hardest one, and it's not too far for the finish, and also the last part is hard, so if you have legs in the final, you need to try it. Yeah, it's true, it's altitude today, but the more important is keeping warm in the descents, keeping easy and drink, and it's long day. I think it's closed for 7 hours tomorrow.
The thing about Chaves was that he looked comfortable all day, really, didn't he? Whereas perhaps one or two of the others, Rafał Majka was off the back a little bit for a while. Ilnur Zakarin was also sort of off the back and back on again. Chaves is just riding round extremely competently at the moment.
Yeah, and the key thing for riders like Chaves, of course, is the flat time trialing is all out of the way, and the only time trialing we've got left is to Alpe di Susi, which is all uphill and should suit him pretty well. And, you know, they're quietly confident, Orica, Green Edge, but actually, in reality, I think they're starting to think about the podium, and they're starting to think that the impossible could happen and Chaves could even win this race. And certainly there are people in the Orica Green Edge camp that believe that.
Well, he's eighth overall at the moment, 2:19 behind Amador. You also spoke to Matt White at the finish, the Orica sports director.
Well, I did, but before I spoke to Matt, I heard about a funny incident that occurred at the finish line today. Jakob Fuglsang, who had been very strong in support of Vincenzo Nibali throughout today's stage, came over the line and he spotted Orica Green Edge's Danish press officer, Brian Nygaard. And he said to Brian immediately, "My God, what have your riders been eating? They absolutely stunk all day today." And sure enough, I got to the Orica Green Edge bus, investigated a little bit. And apparently last night they had, I think it was some kind of veal escallop, very, very heavily garnished with garlic oil, which made heavy use of garlic. And Matt White, the Orica Green Edge direct sportif, was quite... he was very open about the fact that he'd eaten more garlic than most and that I could probably smell the result.
Extraordinary. I mean, veal escallop with garlic does sound nice though, Daniel, so I don't blame them at all.
Well, it's a good job we're talking now in 2016 and not in sort of the late 1990s, because can you imagine there'd be some very facile and puerile jokes we could make about teams using garlic to ward off the UCI vampires.
Ah, very good, very good. Well, anyway, what did Matt White say?
Very much in the same vein as the rest of the team and the rest of the Orica Green Edge support staff. Confident about Chavez's performance, quietly confident, very pleased with his rider, and cautiously optimistic about tomorrow's stage over the Jao. Matt, put your head above the parapet now and give us the goal of Esteban for the next week. I mean, is it top five, top three? Is it even higher than that?
Look, I think we've got so much racing to go, it'd be pretty unrealistic to put a target now. I think by Sunday we're all going to have a better idea of who's really got legs and who hasn't. I think, you know, tomorrow's on paper the hardest day of the tour, and then you've got to back it up with an incredibly hard individual time trial. So Sunday night, we'll be able to know how we can attack the last week and what's realistic and what's not.
And last thing, don't know about your riders, but you had an unusual nutritional strategy, it sounds like. Well, tell us about this bulb of garlic.
Mine personally? Well, no, we have Nikki the chef, and I'm a big fan of garlic. And I ate a little bit too much garlic last night, and people can smell me from a mile off. But I won't be getting sick anytime soon, that's for sure.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast while we are here at the Giro d'Italia. They make energy drinks and gels and bars. Don't think they do garlic flavour. I'm not sure I'd fancy a garlic flavoured energy gel, but they do all sorts of other flavours. And if you're a cyclist, you'll no doubt be familiar with their products. And if you're a listener to the Cycling Podcast, which presumably you are if you've got this far, there is a 20% discount for any of our listeners on Science in Sport products. Visit the website scienceinsport.com and put in the code SIS20, that's SIS20, when you check out, and you can get 20% off anything you buy. Now, Daniel, you've been educating me all week on the Dolomites, what they are, where they are, what they're made of. You've got a Kilometre Zero episode which will be online probably now, as you listen to this. An excellent piece of work explaining the history and the geography of the Dolomites. And the race really goes to the heart of them on Saturday. That's tomorrow, stage 14 from Alpaggio to Corvara. So, Daniel, what are we to expect from what looks like an absolutely terrifying mountain stage? It's not just the peaks that come in the sort of the back half, but it's this huge ramp from the start all the way up to the top of the first category climb, the Passo Pordoi.
Yeah, the sprinters will be having nightmares tonight because the road starts climbing straight away and it doesn't let up, and it goes over 2,000 metres five times. I was actually thinking about the altitude earlier, and we heard an interview from Esteban Chavez, and I asked him about the altitude, but you know, Chavez grew up at 2,680 metres in Bogota, so tomorrow will be like deep sea diving to him because we're going to Passo Pordoi, Passo Sella, and Campolongo, Jao, and the Valparola, and they're all just above 2,000 metres, but these are famous climbs, they're mythical climbs, they're very, very steep, not excessively long in most cases, but the Jao is probably the hardest climb of the Giro d'Italia this year. It's not the highest, but that comes after 168.6 kilometres, or 0.8 kilometres, sorry, the summit, and from that point there are just over 40 kilometres to the finish, and I think that will be decisive. I actually had a long chat yesterday with Maurizio Fondrias, who was the world champion in 1988 and grew up in the Dolomites, lives in the Dolomites now, and he was quite adamant about the fact that the Jao could be the real sort of kingmaker of this Giro d'Italia. It could be the decisive moment.
But it's the sort of stage that does frighten people, even the GC riders who are feeling strong, feeling lively. Is it going to lead towards slightly defensive riding, do you think? Particularly when you think that there's so much more of this to come in the final week.
I think it will, and I think we'll see a similar pattern to what we saw today. I think there will be teams who are in contention for GC firing or trying to fire riders off down the road, riders who otherwise will be of no use to them, anyone who's really got anything left in their legs at this stage, because people are getting very tired, and they will hope that those riders can help their leaders later in the stages. And in the valleys, we always look on stages like this for the valleys where teammates could assist their leaders. There aren't too many. I mean, it's up and down all day, isn't it? But there are a few spots where that could really be decisive, whether someone has got some help or not.
And the interesting thing, I suppose, is are we going to see one or maybe two riders have a complete disaster and fall absolutely definitively out of contention? It's always a possibility, isn't it, when there's been a hard aggressive racing stage like today and then a really hard climbing day like tomorrow.
Yeah, and you look at the teams as well, and you look at Movistar and Astana, how strong they've been, but then, you know, we've made a lot in this Giro to date about the fact that the winner or certainly a very dangerous rider could come from that gaggle of sort of secondary leaders, the Micas, the Zakarins, the Kreuzwicks, and the Chavez. But they have the problem tomorrow, and they haven't really encountered this problem yet of the likelihood that they're going to be very, very isolated, and it could get very lonely out there for them tomorrow. And that's not necessarily always a handicap, but it certainly can be some of the time, and it could be tricky for them out there.
Well, the Giro is building up, isn't it? It's bubbling up. I mean, it's not been a blockbuster of a race in terms of the overall contenders, but it's very, very close between 6, 7, 8 riders who are really evenly matched, and that I think is setting us up for hopefully quite a close, evenly contested final week. But tomorrow will tell us a lot, and this time tomorrow when we're recording the podcast, we may well have narrowed down the possible winners to a handful rather than a large handful.
Who's going to be in pink tomorrow night, Lionel?
I think tomorrow night in pink, well, by the looks of it will be Vincenzo Nibali.
Squalo on the shark, won't
by
it?
2 seconds from Alejandro Valverde, I suspect. And I also think that Kreuzwick and Chavez will certainly be up there. Micah and Zakarin, I'm not as sure about, but we shall see.
Imagine how racy the passage from the shark's tail is going to be when he finally gets the pink jersey.
We might have
when
to get
he finally wins the or he's le- he wins the fight for pink.
We might have to get the bleeper out. Mightn't we? Anyway, on that note, we'd better get to our hotel, Daniel. It's quite a drive through the Italian countryside to our hotel this evening. So thank you very much for listening, and thank you, Daniel.
Thank you, Lionel.